In the previous session, we talked about the training process, suggested levels of discipline. And in this session, we are going to continue with the training process. And our emphasis is going to be wisdom and life skills. You'll notice that we are no longer talking about spanking your child, because, you know, we assume you've taken care of that. And you want your child to grow up wise and have skills that will help them in life. The training process, wisdom, and life skills. Now, this will help your child to succeed in school. And you can prepare your child to succeed in school by teaching them a few basic things. The first one is concentration on what is being said. And I'm going to go through this list a little bit later in much more detail. The second one is sitting still. This denotes the quality of self-control. And the third one is following instructions, which denotes obedience. Now, let me tell a little story that might help you to view this with a different mind. There was an experiment done in a school where there were students of the same academic capabilities. These students, say there are about 60 of them, were placed in three different classrooms. In the first classroom, the teachers were told, the kids in this classroom are very bright children. And the kids in the second classroom, the teachers were told, these are average students. And the kids in the third classroom, they were told, these students are kind of slow. Now, the teachers were told this information when in fact it wasn't true. The children were all of the same academic capability. Now, during the term, when the teachers would teach the kids in the first class, if there was any issue of whether or not the child understands, the teacher would remember what they were told. Now, these kids are supposed to be smart kids. So the teacher would take it upon themselves to spend the extra time to explain to the student the concepts they were teaching until the students got them right. So the teacher went the extra mile to make sure that the student understood, simply because the teacher knew or had been told these students were very bright. Now, in the middle class, if the students were not really catching the concepts, sometimes the teachers would work hard and sometimes they really wouldn't. But in the third class, where the teachers had been told that the students were kind of slow, the teachers would try their best, but if the students did not really respond that well, the teachers would shrug their shoulders and say, after all, these students are supposed to be slow. Now, at the end of the year, the kids tested according to how the teachers had been meant to believe they would test. Now, do you see the point here? You can influence your teacher to treat your child as if they were the most special child just by teaching them a few skills. And we'll be seeing this very shortly. Wisdom and life skills are also important in success in social life. You know, we do not want our kids necessarily to be on the cutting edge of society, but we want to help them to be socially fulfilled, well-liked, and well-adjusted. And now let me give you 10 areas of wisdom and life skills which you can spend time and teach your children and help them to be wise and help them to succeed in life. The first one we'd mentioned earlier is concentration on what is being said. Now, in this area, we want to train our child to look us in the eyes as we are talking to them. And when they are young, this might mean that you hold their head in both your palms and have them look at your eyes as you're talking to them. We want to have eye contact. Now, I know that in many parts of Africa, it's considered rude to look at an adult in the eyes when they're talking to you. In fact, when I was growing up, I was expected to look down, put my hands behind me when an adult was talking to me. And that was really a sign of respect. And, you know, there's really nothing wrong with that. But now, in the present world, our child is going to live beyond our culture. Our child is not going to be restricted to our culture. They're going to move, you know, to other cultures and travel overseas. And so your goal in giving them these skills is to train your child to be successful wherever they live. And so in having them look at you in the eyes, and pay attention to what you're saying to them. You are teaching this child to succeed both in the home and in the school. And when your 5 year old is in class one, and the class teacher, who probably has 50 other kids, and in some schools in Kenya, perhaps 100 kids in one classroom, when the teacher says it's time to put down your math books and pick up your English books, and your child is paying attention and puts away the math books and pulls up the English books, the teacher thinks your child is really intelligent. And when the teacher has 100 kids to pay attention to, the teacher begins to pay more attention to the children who are paying attention to what the teacher is saying. Your child receives that extra help, and your child ends up succeeding not because they are more smart than the others, but because they have learned to concentrate on what is being said. The second area is in the area of sitting still. Now, by sitting still, I don't mean sitting motionless, but I do mean that the child is able to sit down, and let's say that you're in church. We don't want the kids walking around the pews. We don't want them kicking behind the pew with the back of their legs. We don't want them distracting the neighbors. We want them to sit still. And you know, if they are 2 years old and they are tired and they want to lie on mommy's lap, that's acceptable. The key thing here is that they should not be a distraction to other people around them. So train them to sit still. You know, in church perhaps you can take a small drawing book and let them draw things. Perhaps ask them to listen to the sermon and draw what they hear. And, you know, I'd classify all that as part of sitting still. They are not causing a distraction to the person sitting next to them. The third area is in the area of following instruction. This goes ahead alongside with the area of concentrating on what is being said. The child should be able to listen carefully to what you're saying and follow through with those instructions. You might say, for example, "Monica, please take my shoes to my bedroom and bring me my slippers." It's very simple instructions. So Monica takes the shoes and comes back with slippers. But you know, in the training process, you might notice that Monica goes to the bedroom and gets distracted, sits down and begins to play. Teach your children to follow instructions. This is very, very important for school. All of life really is about following instructions. The fourth area is the area of entertaining themselves. You know, there are some children, once you have them in the home, you cannot get anything else done. Having a child in the home is a full-time responsibility. Well, I think it's important to pay attention to our children and to help meet their needs. But there comes a time when you want that child to sit in a corner and play with their toys, or sit in a corner and read a book so that you can complete some work or so that you can take a nap. You can train your child to entertain themselves. Now, this becomes very important when you go out, for example, to the doctor's office, and you enter the doctor's office and there's 3 or 4 other kids in front of you. And if you've not trained your child to entertain themselves, they'll become a nuisance to the other children as they're waiting, or you're waiting for your turn at the doctor's office. So train them, let them sit down and read a book, or perhaps sit down and draw something. And if you're in the home and you want them to entertain themselves for an hour, again, or make the rules very clear, you may stand up to go to the bathroom. And if there's an emergency, you can always come to mommy, you can always come to daddy, but please sit in that corner and do your work while daddy is doing his work. This is really, really important. The next area is in the area of manners. And we can go into all sorts of manners here, but we'll talk a little bit later on about eating manners or table manners. You want to teach your children to use polite language. For example, they should say, "Excuse me." They should say, "Thank you." Teach them those manners that will make them succeed in life, like eating with their mouth closed, like not speaking with food in their mouth. You know, these are very important things that you need to teach your children. The next area is the area of kindness. Now, this is a hard one. Children are not born instinctively kind. As a matter of fact, they tend to be mean to one another. Foolishness in children tends to manifest itself in many ways, and one of those ways is the child being selfish or mean. Proverbs 3 verse 3 says, "Do not let kindness," I think some versions say love, "do not let them depart from you." You'll also notice that kindness is on the list of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5 and verse 22. Do not let kindness depart from you. Now, when the Bible says don't let it depart from you, it presupposes that left on its own, it can easily grow legs, it can easily walk away, it can easily depart from you. Teach your children to be kind to one another. Now, how do you do that? Let's say, for example, you have three children, and you've been to the supermarket and bought them some little things, let's say perhaps some chocolate. Well, you have a choice. You can give each child their own piece of chocolate, or you can give one child the chocolate and ask them to share with the others. Now, this is teaching them to be kind. Teach them how to split the chocolate and share it among themselves. Now, you can have a rule that the one who splits is the one who picks last. If I split the chocolate, I let somebody else pick first. That will teach them to be fair in the way they split that chocolate. You don't want them to split and then keep the bigger piece. But teach them to share, even though you may be able to afford to give them each their own piece of chocolate. Teach them to share that one piece of chocolate, and then later on, give them the second one and let them share it. Teach them to be kind to one another. Again, in many parts of Africa, as you drive through the city, there are all these boys and little girls, street boys and street girls. They'll come around the window of your car, and most of us just raise our windows and pretend they are not there. Well, this is not a very good way to respond to these little boys. Let's suppose that you're driving through the streets of Nairobi, and you come to a traffic light and you stop, and you're in your car with your little son, and these boys come. And what do you do? Now, what I usually do is tell my children that there is nothing wrong with those boys and girls. That all that's happened is that they have missed opportunities in life. They're in the streets for a number of reasons. Some of them, their parents have died. Some of them have just chosen to be in the streets. But you want to teach your children to be kind to those children. Let's say, for example, you have bought your children some piece of chocolate. Why don't you lower the window and let your child be the one giving out the piece of chocolate to the kid in the street? Show them kindness. And as you drive off, your child will have so many questions for you about those children out there. You'll have plenty of opportunity to teach them how to be kind. The next area is the area of neatness. Neatness. You want your child to be neat. You know, you want your little boys to have nice little haircuts that reflect what a boy should look like. And you want your girls to have that well taken care of hair that reflects what a girl looks like. And you want this to be neat. There's a time, you know, in a teenage life where boys and girls think it's fashionable to have their hair look rough. But you know, when they are growing up, if you teach them to be neat, teach them to, when they put on shirts that need to be tucked in, to actually tuck them in and put in a belt. There are shirts that don't need to be tucked in, but there are those that are designed for being tucked in. You teach them to dress in the proper way. Teach them to comb their hair. Teach them to brush their teeth. These are basic hygienic rules that will help your child to be neat. You know, have you ever sat next to a person with bad breath? And, you know, it doesn't make for a very good conversation. Teach them to have good manners, to be kind, and to be neat. The next area, I would call this the issues of gender. Issues of gender. Now, I know there are some parents that perhaps wish to have a little girl for a firstborn, but they ended up with a little boy. And for the first 2 years, they dress up this little boy in girl's clothing. They make the little boy's hair as if they were a little girl. They do little ponytails in the little boy's hair. Now, that's not really very nice. This little boy should grow up knowing they're a boy. They should dress like a boy. They should do things like a boy. Don't let your little boys look like little girls. The little boys should be proud of being boys. And their mothers should praise the femininity, so the masculinity of their little boys. And their fathers should praise the femininity of their little girls. And just praise them and just love them and enjoy them as they are. Don't wish you had a different gender. Just enjoy the little kid as they are. That was God's gift to you. The next area, I'm going to call it the area of letting go. Letting go and developing a personal identity. Many mothers, after they get their children, are home for a brief time, maybe 2 months of maternity leave. And if they are working outside of the home, have to be gone for a number of hours a day. And perhaps they leave the little one with a babysitter or house help, or maybe a relative that lives with them in the home to help take care of this child. This is perhaps the first stage of separation the child begins to experience. They are only 2 or 3 months old, and the parent for some reason can't stay home the whole time, and the child begins to experience some separation. Well, as they get older, and they're going to church, and they go to Sunday school, they realize there's going to be some separation, just for 1 or 2 hours, but they need to grow up knowing it's okay to be away from mommy, to be away from daddy, that parents can come and go. Then, of course, as they get older and begin to go to school, the separation time increases. And if they're in pre-primary school, they are probably in school for, let's say, 3 or 4 hours before they come back home. And they need to learn that it's okay. The parent can go, the parent can come. And sometimes it's more difficult for the parent than it is for the child, this whole issue of separation. But you need to let that child have their own personal identity. You've raised them in the home. You've taught them, you've trained them, you want them to succeed in life. And if your child was a successful 2-year-old and you've continued the training process, as they leave you and go to school, they're going to become a successful 5-year-old, a successful 6-year-old, one who is able to concentrate what the teacher is saying, one who is able to sit still, one who is able to follow instructions. They are successful at that age. And as you come back to pick them from school, you are able to talk through the issues they went through in school. And they are slowly beginning to develop their personal identity. And notice that when your kids begin to go to school, and especially when they get older and are going to school all day, they are spending more time awake with somebody else than they are doing with you. You see, you pick them up from school at 4 o'clock, or perhaps they are riding the school bus, or perhaps they are riding the public transport, and they arrive at home at 6 o'clock or 6:30. They've been away from you for most of the day, and you're only having them in the evening. And there are a number of activities, including bathing and eating dinner before they go to bed. They are spending more time with somebody else than they are spending with you. You need to learn to let these kids be okay when they're away from you. You need to learn to be able to cope with that yourself, and to let these children cope with it when they're away from you. And of course, as they get older and get into their teenage years, you know, if you have not raised them to be successful in every stage of life, then of course you'll be worried. You know, when they go out to a party that's been put up by a classmate, you are worried what they're going to get into. But if you've raised them to have values that they respect, then you will not be as worried. And the last area I'm going to talk about here is the area of modesty. Now, I know that we live in an age where the rules of modesty have been flouted. And it's not like in the olden days where it was clear what was modest and what was not modest. And the designers of clothes, especially male designers, they are designing ladies' clothes so as to expose parts of their body that are really considered private. And you don't want to be the one encouraging your kids to wear this kind of clothes. But of course, you can't do that unless you yourself are modestly dressed. Now, let's picture for a moment a little 4-year-old walking around with clothing that exposes parts of their body that would be better off considered private. As you look at that child, 4-year-old, this may actually look cute. But extrapolate this to a 16-year-old. And you know, that dressing is no longer cute. The designers of clothes want those parts exposed. But you know, even animals hide those parts. So you really don't want your child to be the one walking around exposing parts that are considered private. And here's one question you can ask yourself. Would I be ashamed of the dressing of my child? If my child continued to be dressed the way they are dressed right now, 10 years from now, will I be ashamed of it? And if the answer is yes, now is the time to stop it. Turn it around and raise up that child dressed modestly from a young age, so when they grow older, the issue of rebelling against dressing doesn't even arise. But if you allow immodest dressing when they are young, ask yourself the question, when will I stop it? You know, we have a rule in our home. Any part of the body that is covered by the swimming suit is considered private. You have no business exposing this to the public. It's only very desperate people who walk around exposing these portions of their body. You don't want your child growing up as a desperate person. Let's move on to the next area of learning to serve through responsibility. Now, once your child has been taught to serve, the child should be able to do so without being nagged. You know, there are children in the home where the house help does everything. We are telling you, we do not know where your child, what kind of life they're going to live afterwards. So you want to teach your child to serve when they are young. And once you've taught them to do that, and you taught them how to do that, they should be able to go on and do the work. Teach them to work hard and teach them to do a job from start to finish. There are children who are very good at starting to do things, but in the middle of the work, they get distracted. There are people today who never finish what they started. There's one time I was working for an IT company, an information technology company, and we had a great programmer in that company. And from time to time, we'd get a client come to the company and would want a software custom made for them. So they'd come in and begin to explain what they want the software to do. And, you know, we'd call in the programmer to listen to the client. And this program was really smart. Within a few minutes, they'd cut the thinking process of this client and would be able to complete the requirements of the client. They'll be able to interact with the client and complete for them, tell them what, you know, exactly how they want the project to go. And the client would be really pleased because they'd say, oh, for the first time I found a programmer who understands my needs. Well, we'd ask this employee, how long will it take you to do this project? I said, oh, this will take me 2 weeks. Well, the next day, the programmer would come with the opening screen of the particular assignment they'd been given. It'd have a beautiful opening screen. And, you know, he'll take you through the first 3 or 4 steps and you'll be really impressed. You'll all be waiting for the next stage. Well, the next day he comes in, he has a different opening screen. And this will go on for 3 or 4 days. Then you sit down and ask yourself, well, when are we going to get this program finished? You see, this employee was very keen to begin to work on the project. They were excited about it. And when they did the first opening screen, they were excited how it looked. But then they took time and began to improve that portion of the program, but never went ahead to complete the whole program. Well, needless to say, we didn't keep the employee very long because the customers were very displeased with this work. Now, you want to teach your child to start a job and to stay with it until it is finished. You want to teach your child to be uncomplaining and to work through their job quietly, gently, and uncomplaining. You don't want to have employees that complain. But you know, employees don't just come up. They are raised in homes. They are trained in schools. Do you want to train your child to do work without complaining? And lastly, you want to train your child to do an excellent job. You know, most people just do an average job. You know, and especially in Kenya, you know, you ask somebody to come to your home to do some painting. They say, well, you know, I have 20 years experience in painting. But when they start to paint, you notice that the paint goes all over the place. You find paint on your light switches. You find paint on your doorknobs. You find paint on places where there ought to be no paint. And so this man's 20 years of experience has not taught them anything. They've spent 20 years repeating the exact same mistakes. Now you want to teach your child to have a sense of excellence in their work. This is really important. People who do an excellent job find themselves in places where others cannot step. The Bible clearly says, do you see a man who is skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before mere men. And I'll give you a suggested list of chores or responsibilities in the home with corresponding ages. Here we go. At age 2.5 to 3, your child should be able to lay the table and clear up their room. Now you might say 2.5 to 3, that's really young, they are really short. Well, you know, that child can walk to the cupboard, take out the plates, hand them to you as you lay the table. So they're helping you lay the table. You are teaching them how to lay the table. And by the time they get to age 4, they should be able to do the whole job entirely by themselves. So 2.5 to 3 years old, they're laying the table, picking up toys. At age 4, they are laying the table on their own without any help. By age 5, they're able to clear the table after dinner and they begin to wash their underwear. Now you might say, well, why teach them to wash underwear? Again, you know, in the African culture, you don't normally give your underwear for somebody else to wash for you. You wash your own underwear yourself. So begin to teach those children to wash their own underwear. And by age 6, they're washing their own socks. Now, there are many kids who like to run around in socks because they know that somebody else, either mommy or the house help, is going to wash them. If you teach those kids how to wash socks, they'll take more care of them. And here's how you do it. Take an old toothbrush and let them put the sock in their hands and then dip the old toothbrush in some detergent or some soap and have them take that toothbrush and clean the edge of the sock with their hand in the sock. Let them go gently around those dirty edges and you'll be amazed at how clean those socks can become. Make it a fun activity for the children so that by age 6, they're washing their own socks and washing their own underwear. By age 7, they're washing their own rubber shoes and they're washing dishes. They're washing their school bag by age 8 and cleaning their room by age 9. If you have house help, the house help need not clean your child's room if your child is 9 years of age. That child is making their own bed, cleaning their own room, taking care of themselves. The house help's work gets reduced. Now you may say, well, you know, we pay this house help to do this work. Well, that is true. But you also want your child to grow up, be wise, and have skills that will help them to live their lives. You know, when these kids go overseas, you know, go to Europe or to the United States, they cannot afford to have somebody come and clean their room for them. So teach them when they are young how to clean their room. At age 10 or 11, they should be able to cook. Now, this reminds me of when our daughter Mindy was about 11 years old. And we had taught her how to cook rice. We had taught her how to turn on and turn off the gas. And there's one evening that we needed to be away for about 3 or 4 hours. So we went through the rehearsal process of what she needs to do. And she was quite comfortable with that. So we left her home with her younger brother and her youngest sister. And, you know, we told her she could call us, you know, when she needed to. And 2 hours into our appointment, the phone rang. And there was Mindy on the phone. And at first we thought, I wonder what's going on at home. And so Mindy on the one side says, Daddy, I finished fixing the rice. What do I do with it? And I said, honey, you eat it. And it was really funny because she was all focused on how to fix the rice correctly. And she'd forgotten the whole objective of fixing the rice was to eat it. But you know, you teach your kids to fix things, to cook with you. And I'm going to give you some specific areas of training in wisdom and life skill. And these are not really hard areas, but areas that make your child successful. Let's focus a little bit on the whole area of eating, you know, in the home. How long does it take for a child to eat? I mentioned earlier parents who follow up their kids all over the place. Now, if a child does not finish the food that is served to them, what we do in our home is to take that food and put it in the fridge so that they can eat it for their next meal. Now, if you keep doing that, a child will soon learn to eat and finish their food. They need to eat within a reasonable amount of time, and train your children to use cutlery when they are eating. Now, I know that there are a number of dishes in African homes where it is more desirable to eat with your hands and not to use cutlery. But just remember that you're training your child and equipping them with wisdom and skills that will help them succeed in life. So even though it may be more desirable or more enjoyable to eat with your hands, do train them how to use cutlery. Once they've learned how to use it, you may choose for them to use their hands, but if they should go to a place where they must use cutlery, they will know how to use it. Teach them table manners. Teach them to say, "May I have the salt, please?" Or, "Could you pass the water?" You know, some kids will just say, "Salt, salt," or, "Give me the water," you know. Teach them to use polite language around the table. And when you're serving them, let's say, for example, you've prepared a dish and they don't really like that dish. And, you know, you've spent time, you've bought the food, your wife has cooked it, and the child doesn't like that food. Well, teach them to have options by teaching them to eat what is presented before them. Now, let me repeat that. Many of us think that we teach them to have options by giving them alternatives to the food you've prepared. And I'm saying the exact opposite. You teach them to have options, but by having them eat what is prepared, so that when they visit homes and there are different kinds of food, they know exactly how each one tastes and they can take small portions as is presented to them. If your child does not like to eat liver, and that's the only thing you have served, and you teach them not to eat it, what will happen when that child visits a home and the only thing being served is liver? So what we do is we teach them to eat a small portion of what they don't like. Let them get used to eating it. When they grow up, they can make up their mind whether to eat it or not. But when they are in the home, we train them to have options by having them sample different kinds of food. You teach them to be successful when they go visit grandma, and grandma loves to eat those bitter vegetables that are eaten in Western Kenya, and your child doesn't like those bitter vegetables, and that's all grandma has. Will your child starve that day? No. Your child should be able to tell grandma, "Just a small portion, please." And grandma gives them a small portion of the bitter vegetables, and they eat that with the ugali or the rice or whatever it is, and life goes on. So teach them to make choices by helping them to eat small portions of what they don't like. Now, of course, if the child is allergic to the food, that's a different matter altogether. Teach them to eat a balanced diet. There are many children left on their own will eat crisps or chips the whole day, and this is not really good for them. So teach them to eat a balanced diet, to eat some carbohydrates and some fruits and vegetables. Again, many children don't like to eat vegetables. Teach them those options by having them eat it. And especially for children who are poor feeders at mealtimes, one of the things that really helps is to minimize the eating of snacks between meals. Don't let them eat lots of snacks between meals. If they must eat a snack between meals, make it a healthy snack. Give them a fruit or a carrot or something so that they are hungry enough during the time where they need to eat the meal. Now, in the area of eating out, maybe you're going out to a restaurant. You know, if you go to some of the restaurants that, you know, serve fairly expensive meals, the waiters may be a little bit hesitant to serve you with your children because they're used to kids who come in there and make a mess of the table. If you've taught your children how to use cutlery and you've taught them table manners, it'll be a lot of fun taking them out to a good restaurant to have a meal with them. Let me say a few comments about babysitters, or in Africa, it's probably mostly house helps. Train your children to respect the house help. Now, you know, many house helps are not house helps because that's their job of choice. Many house helps are house helps, perhaps because there's poverty in the home and they must go to work. Or perhaps there wasn't enough school fees and they had to leave school early. Or perhaps for some reason, you know, they are probably bereaved, they are orphans, and they just have to start making money when they're young. So they become house helps, not because they wanted to, but because they need to. Now, if your house help has become a house help for any of those reasons, there's a chance that they may be frustrated in their job. They are doing this work, but they don't really enjoy doing it. Now, house helps live in your home. You entrust your entire household to them. You entrust your children to them. So you need to treat them with respect. You need to love them. You need to help them in the work. And teach your children to respect house help. Now, if you as a parent do not respect your house help, you know what's going to happen? Those kids of yours are waiting to grow up and become just as disrespectful as mommy or daddy. So you train them to respect your house help by, first of all, you yourself treating your house help with kindness. Now, train them to communicate with you if there should be any issues of sexual abuse or anything inappropriate happening in the home while you're away. Train your children to tell you immediately. One of the things that we decided to do with our children is that we did not let the house help bathe them. Now, you know, we had a few exceptions. This time we had a very reliable house help, and we knew that issues of child abuse were not an issue with her, and so we did allow her to bathe them. But as a general rule, we preferred to bathe our children ourselves. Now, why was this important? You see, if somebody has been abusing your child sexually, when you take them for a bath, you'll immediately know. As you bathe them, they'll be feeling a little bit itchy in their private parts, and you know somebody's been messing around with it. So keep in touch with your child by being the one who bathes them, by being the one who takes them to bed, and if possible, by being the one who picks them up from school. I know this is not always possible, and some kids must ride the school bus or take public means, and that's okay. But if you have the means to do it, don't just send a driver to pick them up. You go yourself and pick up those kids and talk with those kids as they leave school. They have so much to talk about. You be the one there listening to them. You get to know what they're struggling with. You get to know about the bullies in the school as you're driving home, and then you get to know how to take care of it. So it's not an issue of, you know, I can afford a driver, let him go. No, it's an issue of, my kids are so precious, I'm going to pick them up myself. So teach your children to safeguard against sexual abuse. Now, how about in the grocery store? You know, in Nairobi, Kenya, you know, you're probably taking them to Uchumi or to Nakumat. Teach your children to shop without pulling things off the shelves. You know, these ladies and guys in the supermarket have taken time to arrange those shelves. And, let your child be respectful of that, to pick things from the shelves and put them in the shopping basket without pulling them off. Teach them to ask for things in a respectful manner. Perhaps you are shopping and you pass through the chocolate area and they want a piece of chocolate. Well, if that's okay with you, let them pick one. But if it's not okay with you, let them learn to accept no for an answer. Tell them ahead of time, we are going to the supermarket, we're going to buy 3 items, we're not buying any chocolate today. Let them learn to accept no for an answer. Another way of doing this is by giving them a limited amount of money. Let's say, for example, in a Kenyan context, you give them 50 shillings. And you tell your kid, you can pick anything that costs 50 shillings or less. So let them walk around the supermarket looking for things that cost 50 shillings or less. You know, they might pick a toy that costs 500 shillings because they can't quite read the figures, and they come back to you, say, Daddy, can I pick this up? Say, well, that costs 500 shillings, you know. You need to take that back and pick up something that costs 50 shillings. And by doing that, you're training your child to think through. They don't just pick anything. there are limitations to what you can buy, and you want them to be respectful in the way they shop. So give them freedom to choose, but give them parameters, within which they can choose. Let us shift a little bit to a different area. This is the area of bedtime, the time that the child needs to go to bed. Train your children to go to bed at about the same time every night. I'm talking about little children who don't have a whole lot of homework to do. Now, how do you do that? There are certain chores or procedures that come before going to bed. Let's say, for example, you bathe your two-year-old before you put him to bed. And so, you know, the child knows that bathing precedes going to bed. Perhaps you read them a Bible story. Or as they grow older, you tell them to go and take a shower, tell them to brush their teeth, tell them to change into their night clothes. All these are things that they know. These are signals or signs that bedtime is approaching. So begin that procedure. Begin to develop little procedures that make the child psychologically prepared for bedtime. And once they're in bed, you go there and read them a story or pray with them. Now, if you want your kids in bed at 8 o'clock, that probably means you need to eat at 6:30, finish eating by 7 or 7:15, and begin to go through the chores that prepare them for bed. And when the child goes to bed, if they don't want to fall asleep, that's okay. You cannot force them to sleep, but they should stay in bed. You know you've had a long day, your husband and yourself have had a long day, and you want to come back home and have some time to yourselves. And I know some homes where the little three-year-old determines bedtime. You know, nobody goes to bed until midnight because three-year-old Martin would not go to bed. Well, that's not acceptable. The parents decide what time the child goes to bed. And if you want that child in bed at 8 o'clock, you make sure they are fed by 6:30, make sure they are all prepared for bed, and put them in bed. Now, some of you will be asking, what if the child begins to cry? Well, you have a one-year-old or one-and-a-half-year-old who is crying because they've been put to bed. It's a foolish thing for a child to cry when the parent wants them to sleep. So what do? You let them cry. Let them cry, and on that first day, they may cry for a whole 45 minutes. Now, monitor that child, because there are some kids who, when they begin to cry, they begin to cough, and they may throw up and choke on that food. So make sure that you're listening to their crying. And if they are coughing or choking, you be there to take care of that. But if that child cries for a good 45 minutes and they know that you are not coming to them, you know what will happen the next day? They'll cry for 30 minutes. The third day, they'll cry for 15 minutes. And the fourth day, they'll stay happily in bed and play and not cry. You know, it may take a week or even 2 weeks to train your child to stay in bed. But what is 2 weeks compared to the rest of your life? You invest the time that you need to train that child to stay in bed, and then you can have a life after dinner. The three-year-old should not have to determine bedtime. Train them to cooperate with you when they're going to bed, to clear up their room before they go to bed, and make life enjoyable for them. Those little kids need a number of hours of sleep, otherwise they cannot function effectively the next day. Let's talk for a moment about character issues. I know when we are talking about modesty, I say that do not allow your child to dress in a manner that you'll be embarrassed when they become teenagers. Let me rephrase that. Do not allow your children to develop behavior or social patterns which you do not want to see in their lives when they become teenagers. Now, you may be asking, what kind of patterns are these? And the first one is the manner of dressing. If you don't like what you see on them when they are 7 years old, extrapolate that 10 years later when they are 17. If you don't like what you'll see, now is the time to stop that kind of dressing. Or perhaps it's the way they relate to one another in the home. There are kids who are always shouting at one another. Kids who are always losing their temper at one another. Kids who are always losing their temper at their parents. Extrapolate this behavior. You know, you've got a seven-year-old who's shouting at her mother, a seven-year-old boy who's shouting at his mother. Extrapolate that to 12 years, when he's 19 years old, he is taller and bigger than your wife, and he comes at home and there is no food in the fridge, and this boy has been left on his own to shout and bang things, and what do you suppose will happen to his mother? You know, you kind of get afraid to leave your son home with his mother because he's not been trained to have self-control and take care of his anger or his temper. So kind of behavior is not acceptable, and now is the time to take care of it. Or fighting among siblings. You know, when your kid is 2 years old and throws food at mommy, that may look cute, but extrapolate that to a 15-year-old or 18-year-old comes at home and things are not going well, and the thing in their hand is a knife. You don't want them throwing their knife at your wife. So don't let them manifest temper tantrums. You know, we see this very commonly in Kenya among university students. You know, they are angry at university administration for one reason, but they manifest their anger by throwing stones at motorists who have nothing to do with their problem. That's really a lack of self-control. That is an explosion of their temper tantrum. Or sometimes, you know, members of parliament fist fighting in parliament. These are men or women who are supposed to be giving direction to the country, but have no self-control. You don't want your child growing up with no self-control. Any behavior that you see in the early years that you'll be ashamed to see later on in life, now is the time to take care of it. Now, defiance to parents or ignoring parents or rebellion, or, you know, things like talking disrespectfully, refusing to follow instructions, or inability to concentrate on what is being said, or working on a task until completion. These are all areas that that you really need to work on and help your child to be successful by training them to work on those areas. You know, there are kids who do not pick up after themselves. You know, they'll probably wash dishes but leave the sink in a mess. You know, teach them not just to do a work, but to do it well and to finish well. Tidiness, you know, in the way they dress. Tidiness in the way they take care of their room. Tidiness in the way they take care of their toys. You know, hygiene of their body. You know, as they become teenagers and they begin to sweat, teach them to use some deodorant. Teach them to look presentable. And ask yourself these questions. If I do not arrest these patterns, if I do not, you know, bring to a stop this kind of behavior, then who is going to do it? You know, teach your children to deal with pride and unforgiveness. You know, as I've spent time doing some marriage counseling, I have found that pride, selfishness, and unforgiveness are top of the list that ruin marriages. Teach your children to deal with pride and unforgiveness. And you know, as you listen to this, you might be scratching your head and saying, well, I have issues with pride myself. I have issues of unforgiveness myself. Just remember that the secret to being a good parent is for you to be a more godly person. If you have issues of pride and unforgiveness, you need to spend time with the Lord. If you don't do that, regardless of what you teach your children, they're going to grow up and emulate your example. You need to be the one who emphasizes inner qualities as opposed to outward qualities. What do I mean by inner qualities? You know, pride and unforgiveness, those are inner qualities. You know, as far as outer qualities, the dressing and, you know, the care of their hair, these are things that can be changed within no time. I remember growing up in Western Kenya, and the girls that I grew up with, they used to wash their hair with water and soap, and their hair didn't look, you know, very attractive. But when these girls went to college and they began to mix with girls that were raised in the city, you know what? It took them one afternoon at the hairdressers to change their outward appearance. It doesn't take long. You know, have those little hands, you know, manicured, and the little feet pedicured and their hair done. It takes one afternoon. But if you have not taught them inner qualities, you cannot get rid of pride in one afternoon. You cannot get rid of unforgiveness in one afternoon. So raise up your children emphasizing inner qualities and having less emphasis on the outward qualities, because it's very, very easy to take care of the outward afterwards. You be the one emphasizing the spiritual development of your children. In school, they get a lot of emphasis on academics, and that is good. That's why schools were set up. But you be the one challenging them in the spiritual development. We'll have a whole session on the spiritual development of your children, so I won't go into that right now. But when they're going to church, take them to use a notebook to take notes when the pastor is preaching, and when you go back home and sitting over lunchtime, you know, have them share with you the you know, what the pastor is talking about. Teach them by example. You be the one sitting down and taking notes as the pastor is preaching, and teach your children by example to take notes, and really praise your children. Use words of encouragement that will help to reinforce the habits that you're teaching them. I hope this wisdom and life skills that I've portrayed to you in the last 45 minutes, I hope you'll find them useful as you raise your children to be successful in life.